step forward in the matter of JH&AR versus R&M Tagliarini. May we please have appearances of counsel? Welcome, counsel. Ms. Hughes, please go ahead.
Thank you, Chief Justice, Associate Justices. May it please the Court, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
That's fine.
The case here today is, by all accounts, a tragedy. We have one of the most innocent and vulnerable members of our society, a 10-month-old infant who was burned and sustained permanent scarring as a result of the unfortunate actions of his father, actions for which his father ultimately pled guilty to child abuse and neglect. And while our sympathy for the plaintiff is certainly very real, we cannot confuse that sympathy with the legal liability of the defendants who owned and managed the apartment building where the plaintiff was injured. The issue before the Court today is whether the Appellate Division erred in their holding that the defendants had a legal duty pursuant to both common law and the regulations for the maintenance of hotels and multiple dwellings to protect the plaintiff from the heat of an uncovered, although properly functioning, radiator. And I respectfully submit that the Appellate Division erred in their decision. With respect to the common law, I respectfully submit that the Appellate Division made some mistakes in their recitation of the facts concerning the availability of the control valve on the radiator in question and how that impacted the tenant's ability to control the heat from the radiator. And I believe that from that mistake of fact flowed a mistaken conclusion as to the landlord's retention of control of that radiator. But aside from the issue of control, we need to look at the issue of whether a properly installed, properly functioning, properly maintained radiator can be considered an unreasonably dangerous condition simply by virtue of the fact that it was not covered. And there are no reported cases in New Jersey or any other state that I'm aware of where a court has held a landlord liable under such conditions. And I believe the Appellate Division's decision in this case creates a slippery slope whereby we will be holding landlords to a higher standard of childproofing than parents and tenants. And it moves in the direction of making landlords insurers of property, which is, of course, contrary to well-settled principles of premises liability under common law. With respect to the Appellate Division's decision regarding the regulations for the maintenance of hotels and multiple dwellings, I also respectfully submit that they were in error. The Appellate Division seemingly gave no weight to the representations of the Department of Community Affairs, which was the very agency responsible for promulgating and enforcing those regulations. And when we look at those representations, it's clear that the DCA did not consider radiator covers to be required under the regulations. That was brought out by the testimony of the DCA inspector, Miles Pryor, and more importantly, by the certificates of inspection, which were issued to the defendants, both before and after the accident, affirmatively stating that they were in full compliance with the hotel and multiple dwelling law, as well as the regulations for the maintenance of hotels and multiple dwellings. And in short, my clients did everything they could within their power to comply with the regulations. They registered. They submitted to inspections, multiple inspections. They paid for those inspections. They submit to re-inspections. And they were, in fact, given assurances that they were in compliance. So it would be fundamentally unfair to retroactively oppose a duty under those regulations to cover radiators when that duty had never been before articulated prior to the Appellate Division's decision. And for those reasons, I respectfully request that this court reverse the appellate division's decision and reinstate the grant of summary judgment of the trial court to my clients.
You're done with your opening statement?
I am. Thank you.
Let's start with your first point and clarify for us the significance of the control valve. Is it the equivalent of an on-off switch?
It is an on-off switch, but it is more than that because it can go from totally closed, which would be off, to totally open, which would be on, and it could be regulated there in between, so of a quarter turn, a 50% of a turn, all the way to full capacity. So while it doesn't have a number on it in terms of you can set it to this degree, temperature-wise, it does. You do have the ability to move it between zero and full capacity and regulate it in between.
Those radiators work, as I understand it. Hot water comes from the central unit, it comes into the radiator, and it generates heat. And there's a control valve, a black knob, and based on how much you open it or shut it, that controls how much water goes into the system. That controls the amount of heat that it generates or that comes through the pipe. By having less water, it's a little cooler. If you open it all the way, it's full of hot water, and it's more hot. So that doesn't have a number set at the 60 or 50. By twisting the knob open or close, you can regulate how hot the radiator is. Is that the way it works?
So let's stay with that for just a moment. Can the apartment owner modify the temperature, or is that only within the control of the landlord?
The ability to modify the temperature of the radiator itself would be based on the setting on that control valve. The landlord retains the control of setting the thermostat, which regulates the temperature in the apartment. So the thermostat is set to a certain temperature for the air. That temperature doesn't affect the heat coming out of the radiator. The radiator has to get to a certain temperature in order to generate heat. That can be controlled by the control valve. The thermostat, and that's where I believe the appellate division was mistaken in there when they said that without the thermostat in the apartment, the tenants had like an illusory control of the radiator. But if there was a thermostat in the apartment, it wouldn't have given the tenants the control that they had from the control valve. In other words, as in Coleman, where you just had a shutoff valve, an on-off valve, and a thermostat wouldn't give the tenants the same amount of control that the tenants in this case had on the radiator, because here we had a valve that could go from zero to full capacity.
So I thought the illusory control is this. I imagine it's in the winter, it's 15 degrees out. You're going to have to turn that radiator on probably to full blast. So the radiator is going to generate how much heat? You know the answer to that, right from the trial record. How hot will that radiator be when it's on full blast?
We don't have a specific temperature that it would be on full blast, but I mean the temperature, the water has to get to, I think it's 212 degrees.
Yeah, what I'm saying is when it gets really cold out and when there are children in an apartment, you got to put the heat on, okay? You don't want your children freezing.
Certainly.
So, which means that radiator is going to be burning hot if it comes in contact with a child or anyone, correct?
It would depend on the setting that you have it on.
Well, when it gets really cold out, if you don't want freezing temperatures in the house or the apartment, you're going to be setting it at a rate where that radiator necessarily is going to be burning hot, no?
Well, I mean, any radiator has to get hot enough that could cause a prolonged burn with prolonged contact in order to heat a room. But the hotness of the radiator is essential to its function. It has to get hot in order to heat the room.
Of course. So do we know from the record what the cost is for one of these radiator covers? Like what?
We don't have a specific number, but it's conceitedly it's not a huge expense. But in the absence of a duty, it doesn't really matter how much it would cost. I mean, certainly there are other factors that would go into. Right. You have to cover them. Yeah. You have to.
So one of the things we do is, as a court, from time to time, is determine whether or not there should be a duty. And some of the factors to be considered are notions of public policy, fairness, and when the danger is unreasonably great and the danger can be mitigated at low cost. Those are some of the factors that a court would consider on whether imposing a duty, particularly where, as you started out, the potential victims are going to be the most vulnerable members of our society, right?
Yes, I understand that, but I think if we're talking about imposing a duty that didn't exist beforehand, that's something that's best left to the legislature and the regulatory agency.
And any duty imposed on landlords would be a massive number of dwellings, children or no children. If a duty were imposed on landlords to include a radiator cover, the cost, the composite cost, is unlikely to be minimal, correct?
Certainly.
Let me ask you a little different question. Are there any studies on how hot these covers get? Because the more modern heaters, hot air blows in, and you can regulate that through the thermostat. The way these older systems work is the radiator gets very hot, and then that heats the room just by coming in contact with that air. In order for to work, if you cover it with a cover so that no heat comes out, that doesn't work. It's not blowing. Has to work through the air in the room coming in contact with it. So of necessity, the cover must get hot also. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. So are there any studies on how covers protect from getting hot and still heat the room? Is there, have you seen anything that would tell us how hot that cover would get in order to heat the room?
I can't point to any studies on that, but common sense would tell us that certainly heat would have to be emanating in order to heat the room. And if you do a Google search on radiator covers, you can find all sorts of different covers. And the extent of all those covers can differ. There are covers that just go over the top of the radiator, covers that go over the top and the sides, some that are decorative with grating, where you know the covers themselves could open up a Pandora's box of potential
problems. But I guess my
question
is, if the cover never got hot, then it wouldn't work because the hot surface has to come in contact with the air in the room.
Heat has
it's
to
not
come
blowing
out
of
the
air. Source.
Exactly. You can't insulate a radiator.
You acknowledge, look, DCA has certain inspection requirements for heating systems, correct?
Correct.
They get inspected every year, and one of the things you look for is insulation of the boiler and pipes, right?
Correct.
They have to be insulated. Where does, pipes go throughout a building, as they would through this building, into and out of apartments. Where does the heating system that is inspected every year and requires insulation, where does that end? And the apartment begin?
Well, that's where we come into some discrepancy in the regulations with the use of the term heating system. Because, and I believe it's 14.7, the regulations talk about the heating system needing to be inspected annually.
Right.
Now, clearly the radiators in the apartments are not inspected annually because the dwelling units are only inspected every 5 years. So one could make the determination that heating system for the purposes of 14.7 refers to the boiler.
Well, it's not just the boiler. It's boiler and the pipes.
I believe, well, for 14.7, I believe it just says heating system.
Right.
14.3 talks about the parts that need to be insulated or
okay.
guarded. And then there they explicitly state the three items, the heating risers, ducts, and hot water lines. So that gets to the issue of, you know, how the appellate division interpreted that regulation, because if we include radiators in heating systems for the purposes of 14.3, we would necessarily need to include it for 14.7, and there we certainly have a conflict.
But I thought 14.3 is inspected annually as well.
The heating system is supposed to be inspected annually.
Does that include the pipes and other parts of the system that are referred to in 14.3?
That's not clear from the regulations.
Are they inspected every year, the systems?
Well, certainly not anything that is within the dwelling unit.
Well, so there's a pipe in the dwelling unit that is adjacent and or attached to the radiator. Is that right?
I believe there is. It's not clear from the picture whether it's attached. There's a pipe in the photographs.
But you have the engineering report, and you also have the superintendent who tell us that, even if the photo is not that easy to follow, correct?
Correct.
Is that part of the heating system? Is that a hot water line or like item that would be included under 14.3?
I don't know specifically what that pipe in the photograph is.
What could it be?
I'm not sure. It could be a cold water pipe. I'm not sure what that is. We don't have any factual testimony on what that pipe is.
You agree that a hot water pipe has to go into the radiator somewhere?
Yes.
And that there's a valve there that controls the hot water coming out of that pipe and into the radiator?
Correct.
That's okay. Not a cold water pipe.
Are we talking about the pipe that comes out of the ground and connects to the radiator?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. That
That's
is
hot?
Yes.
Okay. Why is that? Must that be insulated?
The hot water pipes, the heating risers, ducts, and hot water lines are supposed to be insulated pursuant to the...
There's a pipe in the apartment that we've just talked about. Is that, first, is that part of the heating system? Second, is it insulated?
I'm just confused as to which pipe you're talking about, as to the pipe that is...
The pipe that comes out of the heat provides the hot water to go into the heater to heat it, that has the valve on top. That's the part we're talking about.
Yes, that would be part of the heating. That
would be a heat riser, wouldn't it?
But when DCA shows up every year, as opposed to every 5 years, to inspect dwelling units, when DCA shows up and does an inspection of the heating system, does it inspect the pipe that extends to the radiator in the dwelling units?
It does not go into the dwelling unit when they do the annual inspection.
So it's your contention that DCA views the heating system to exclude anything that is in the dwelling unit as opposed to in the boiler room or somewhere accessible?
For the purposes of their inspection, I certainly concede there's some ambiguity in the statute as in the regulations as to how the term heating system is used.
Well, what ambiguities? I'm looking at D, and I'm trying to figure out what ambiguity is there. The heating system, and it's including such parts as heating risers, ducts, and hot water lines, shall be covered with an insulating material or guard to protect occupants and other persons on the premises from receiving burns due to chance contact. I've read that, right?
Correct.
So the questions that you've been hearing from the bench are the pipe that immediately connects to the radiator. That would seem to be either a heating riser or a hot water line that should be insulated. Would you agree?
It could be, yes.
And so the next question is, and that's a non-exhaustive group, including, and it says, or guard. Like, why wouldn't guard, therefore, apply to the actual radiator so that the pipe is supposed to be insulated so people don't get burned, but people can get burned on the radiator? What does the guard refer to? Since we know that the pipes will be insulated, why wouldn't guard be applied to the radiator, which would seem to be at least part of a heating system?
Okay, well, first, to start with the heating system, if we look at that pipe, which is similar to the up pipe in Coleman, that is not something that's ordinarily known to everybody to be hot, and that was demonstrated in Coleman by the parents stating they didn't know that pipe could get hot. It's different from a radiator itself, which is universally known to everyone except small children who need to be supervised, that the radiator can get hot. Also, the up pipe can be insulated or protected without affecting the ability to heat the room. And we can't obviously insulate a radiator, so the question would be, can you guard a radiator? But the regulations are woefully inaccurate in describing what type of guard could be used or how it would be installed and the type of coverage that would be required.
Well, it doesn't tell you what insulating material is being used. It's just, these are general terms. Use insulating material or guard to protect occupants.
Once something is insulated, it can be insulated with, you know, whatever it takes to be insulated. A radiator can't be insulated.
You're saying there's a distinction between pipes and really other aspects of the heating system because they're not intended to heat the room.
Correct.
So if you can insulate those, really all aspects of this, even the boiler presumably, without causing the room to not be heated.
Correct. And that's what our other courts have stated. And when faced with this type of situation, that radiators, there's no duty to cover the radiator because the radiator, the risk posed by a radiator is essential to its function.
So let me go back to my original question. Our DCA regulations say you have to insulate and or guard the heating system. Where do you argue that obligation ends? Where does it leave the landlord and go to the tenant? At what point in that boiler, pipes, up pipes, down pipes, whatever, where does it end and where does the tenant's responsibility begin?
I would agree with what Judge Rose's decision that it begins and ends with those three items that are listed in the regulation.
So, and from our earlier back and forth, that would seem to include the vertical pipe that connects to the radiator, correct?
Include the vertical pipe that connects.
So help me with this. One of your arguments is DCA, if the radiator itself is included in the heating system, would have to come and inspect that every year under the regs. And yet, we have these vertical pipes that convey heat that are not insulated and are not inspected by DCA each year. How does that all make sense?
Well, pursuant to the regulations, the regulations say heating system has to be inspected every year. Now, what the DCA does in terms of inspecting that heating system every year, I can't speak to, but I can tell you that they don't enter the dwelling units only on every 5 years is when they enter the dwelling unit.
So if they don't need to inspect the vertical rod that falls within the definition of heating system, why should we be concerned about the need to inspect a radiator where a duty extended there? Follow me?
Could you repeat that for me?
Is it a real worry, is it a real concern that this court should have about annual inspections of the radiator if right now DCA is not inspecting what we've heard you agree is indeed part of the heating system in the apartment?
No, my concerns are not with, and I bring that up not as a concern as to what they're not are or not inspecting. I bring it up as to demonstrate that the use of the term heating system within the regulations has an ambiguity, and as such, we have to look to the extrinsic evidence. And when we look at the extrinsic evidence...
So here's a question that perhaps you don't have the answer to. We have a published opinion by the Appellate Division. DCA is undoubtedly aware of it. Have they made any efforts to come in and say, the active got it wrong, and we want this to be known?
As far as I'm concerned, they have not.
And you're not arguing, or maybe you are arguing, that a single DCA inspector who testifies can be speaking on behalf of the agency, of the commissioner?
I'm not arguing that. What I'm arguing is that his testimony certainly is evidence of a pattern of enforcement. And
for a single inspector?
Well, as he talked about his training, his inspection of this building, but the building was also inspected by a different inspector as well, and the certificate of inspection was issued both times when there weren't radiator covers. And those affirmative certifications, I believe, leads to a fundamental unfairness of now retroactively applying that regulation as requiring a duty to cover radiators.
But there's and perhaps you don't know this, the answer to this, but if a landlord is really at sea in reading regulations as to what is required of him or her, is there a process at DCA to get that answer?
I can't speak to that, whether or not there are. I know that the defendants did what they were supposed to do, which is to register with the Department of Community Affairs. And they registered properly, and then from there you submit to inspections that the landlords pay for.
One other question. On the 5 years in the dwelling unit, the DCA comes in to inspect. Do you know whether they look at is that inspection about heating systems, or is that inspection about other aspects of the apartment as to whether it's safe for people to live in?
It's about other aspects as well. They do the fire code, you know.
They do the fire code, but do you know whether they look at any the radiator in those inspections?
Well, there is, I believe on their checklist for those inspections, there's a specific checklist for 14.3.
Okay.
So
they're coming in every 5 years in your client's building, and they're checking off something on 14.3, and you have had uncovered radiators through all of that, and there's never been a complaint.
Correct. Not only a complaint, but actual affirmative certificates of inspection saying you're in full compliance.
Nor is there insulation on the pipe, and there's been no write-up for that either. So how much can we read in from all of this?
Well, we have to also keep in mind that the pipe was not the issue in this case. It was clearly the radiator that was the source of the injury.
I understand. The question, though, is what can we divine from the inspection process about what is and is not included in the heating system?
Again, The heating system for the purpose of the inspection of the every 5 years, are you referring to? The 5-year inspection of the dwelling units or the annual inspection of the boiler? I can't speak to what is the extent of the annual inspections for the heating system pursuant to 14.7, but I know they do come into the units every 5 years, and we never had a violation concerning the radiators, uncovered radiators.
And the, and when they come in into the dwelling unit, they don't, their checklist does not include 14.7. In other words, they're not coming in saying we're here to, or implicitly or otherwise, we're here to inspect that portion of the heating system that's in the dwelling unit.
I don't believe so.
They're checking out 14.3 only. Is that what their checklist says?
That is my understanding.
Do we know that authoritatively from this record with just the single inspector?
We had, when he was deposed, he talked about the checklist that he had for the inspection. So I believe that is a form, it's a printed form, not just something that was individual to Mr. Pryor.
Anything you'd like to add?
That's it.
Thank you. Mr. Molinari.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Associate Justices. I had asked for 5 minutes of uninterrupted time. I'm willing to waive that. I'll just make one preliminary remark, which I think many respondents have said before you. The Appellate Division clearly got it right. It was a 3-0 published opinion where they looked at both the common law and the Multiple Dwelling Act, and I stand before you to say that they got it right. I'm prepared to address a lot of the questions that Your Honors asked to counsel.
Please go ahead.
Okay. So it is troubling to me, as Your Honor pointed out, that if you want to say that the radiator is ambiguous, right, the heating system, although it's clear that that list is not... it's not just limited to those three terms. So you might want to argue that radiator is ambiguous, but those three terms, the ducts, the risers, they're not ambiguous. They're so stated. Well, then isn't it troubling that Miles Pryor, the inspector who issues the certificate saying everything is A-OK, the pipe in the wall is not covered. How does he issue that certificate? Does that then give the landlord a pass to say, oh, he didn't fail me for that, so I didn't know that I didn't have to cover that?
Can't a landlord or anyone assume that an inspector is trained to do his job and that they will do it properly, and so that if someone receives a certificate, the inquiry should not be, well, was this person actually qualified? Did he do a good job? Is he a bad inspector? Is he lazy and didn't do anything? Aren't you allowed to rely on a government document that says you passed inspection to believe that what you have there is okay? Or do you have to go into an individual inquiry as to each inspector that comes to your premises as to see and then determine whether they do a good job or not?
I don't think you can. I think you need to look at the statute. It's a clear statute that binds that landlord. It's the Multiple Dwelling Act. The statute can't be any more clear. Again, put aside radiator. It can't be any more clear with respect to the pipe.
But put aside radiator is a big put aside in this case because that's what it's about. Is it your contention that the statute clearly includes radiators in the heating system?
I think that if you're going to look and define heating system, as Dr. Nolte, my expert in this case, said, you don't have a heating system without the vessel that brings the heat into the apartment. Therefore, you don't have a heating system without the radiator.
I understand your expert's opinion. Is it your contention that the word heating system unambiguously includes radiator?
I can't say unambiguously.
Okay, so is it your contention it's ambiguous and it might or might not include radiator?
It is my contention that it is simple logic would say yes, but it is, I will admit to you, ambiguous.
Would you concede that for this court to find a duty would be something at least novel in this state?
I think if you go back to Coleman. And put in context, the Multiple Dwelling Act, I think, was written in 68. Coleman is 69. Coleman didn't apply the Multiple Dwelling Act because the Coleman household was only two units, so the Multiple Dwelling Act didn't apply. So I think that they use the analysis there. So I don't know that this would be a novel.
When I'm saying novel, doesn't mean at some point, whenever the court finds a duty that didn't exist before, it becomes, I guess, novel. Is there anything, do you have any support anywhere in the country for the common law duty that you're asking this court to recognize?
Neither way, actually. There's nothing to say you don't have to cover them.
Well, there's one case that I came across that said definitely no. There's a New York Court of Appeals case. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, because the New York statute, the New York Multiple Dwelling Act, only specifically says you have to cover pipes. It's specific to pipes. It doesn't say heating unit. It just says you have to cover pipes. And that's why it was construed that way.
14.3 says heating risers, which are pipes, ducts, which in some way are pipes, but if in the hot air heating system, as opposed to pipes here, and hot water lines. Those are pretty specific terms, and that's what it really mentions in the heat as parts of the heating system that should be covered. I know it says including such parts, so arguably you could say other parts are included, but the specific ones here are pipes of one type or another. Can we agree on that?
We do agree on that, but the laws of statutory construction say when it's written that way, it's illustrative. It's not exhaustive.
Are you conceding that ducts are pipes?
I'm saying that if you look at the definition under the Multiple Dwelling Act of 14.3D,
just so we're clear.
It says that they should all be covered.
So the regulation is, it's a regulation, not a statute, can be evidence that might support a duty. But a regulation itself doesn't create a common law duty. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you is about the record developed in this case. Was there any evidence presented in terms of the number of children who are injured every year from radiator burns, the cost of putting a shield or cover over a radiator, were any of these things developed? Because it would seem to me that if this court is exercising its common law duty, declaring a public policy, we should know the extent of the danger and also the cost of minimizing that danger. Go ahead.
With respect to the Part A, there was nothing in the record as to how many children have been burned across the country or anywhere as a result of radiators. With respect to Part B, which was the cost, if you go back again to Coleman, which was 50 years ago, Coleman said the cost of covering these radiators is minimal.
No,
but Coleman is
that?
Dealing
what?
With the pipe.
Yeah.
Coleman is dealing with the pipe. Coleman is not dealing with the portion of the system, if you want to include this in the system, that delivers heat. So you could insulate pipes so that no one could ever be injured, and they would still do their portion of the job to deliver heat. When you're talking about insulating or covering a radiator, you not only have to talk about what does it cost to throw a cover on it, but is the thing still going to work when you're done covering it? Don't you have to consider that as well?
And the answer to that is yes.
And we don't have any record on whether causing these radiators under these old systems to be covered to the point where they're not going to burn a child or an adult or anybody would cause them not to function. We don't have that, do we?
Nor do we have the opposite, that it would cause them not
to function. I understand that, but you're asking this court to impose a new duty. You're relying on Coleman. You cited Coleman. Coleman's dealing with not with radiators. It's dealing with a portion of the heating system that can be insulated without any impact on the ability of the system to function. You're talking about something very different, aren't you?
I'm talking about a cover, which I've seen many covers that they are, the heat can come out because there's enough gaps in them, so the heat will come out. The inside of that cover is insulated, so the outside does not get hot to the touch. It doesn't affect the ability of the radiator to work, and they're available for a couple of $100 anywhere on Google. And as we pointed out in our brief, pass that along to the tenant when they sign the lease. But it's really there for, you know, a decade, and it doesn't affect the ability of the radiator to work.
Doesn't Coleman turn on? Coleman does talk about pipes, and specifically talks about the riser that I think your adversary spoke about that may go into the apartment and ultimately into the radiator. But Coleman turned on control.
Yes.
Coleman decided that the landlord in this two-dwelling place had a centralized thermostat, and he had control. And the pipes we were talking about were literally the pipes in the wall. It could be the pipe coming out of the floor. Didn't your adversary just essentially explain why Coleman militates against you?
Well,
because the control of the radiator is in the apartment. The landlord doesn't have control over that. That door is locked. That person lives there. That person regulates how much water goes in and out. If it's too hot, they turn it down. If it's too cold in there, they open it up. Doesn't Coleman go against you?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
Respectfully. In this case, the superintendent Nieves was deposed, and he said that that control valve only turns it on and off and doesn't regulate the temperature. And that's where the appellate division got and reached that conclusion. And that, I think, in addition to what Justice Rabner said, Chief Justice Rabner, was that's what made it illusory, because really it could go on and off. And as the prosecutor, part of the record was the prosecutor's office came in on a cold radiator, and within two minutes, it was unbearable to the touch.
You heard Ms. Hughes comment that the control valve allows you to control the flow. Is that in the record?
That's what the owner of the building said at his deposition, Mr. Tagliarini, but that's not what the superintendent of the building said, Mr. Nieves. I'll remind the court that in Coleman, the owner, there's only two units in the building, the Coleman apartment actually had the thermostat in it. And the court still found that they had no control.
They had no control over
the
pipes in the wall.
Pipe. Yes.
That heated up regardless of what you said in the apartment, whether you turned the thermostat up or down.
Yes.
And part of your argument in terms of public policy, even though unfortunately we don't have the cost of these shields in the record, even if it's a couple of $100, passed over a number of years, and even if carried over to rent, it would be minimal to insignificant.
Absolutely minimal to insignificant.
Do we have anything in the record about what covers work with what radiators?
No.
Do we have anything in the record that indicates that there is a radiator cover that would work with the particular system in this apartment that would cost $100 or a couple hundred dollars or whatever it costs?
No, Your Honor. But the system that's in this apartment is really not unlike most of the apartment buildings that are 50-plus years old. So it certainly is out there, and if you go back to the Multiple Dwelling Act and if you read it to include radiators, which I obviously suggest that you do and the APDIV said you should do, then there has to be a cover that you could get.
Should we be, and this is pivoting off of the last question Justice Patterson asked, should we be making like significant issues concerning public policy by recognizing what would seem to be a new duty? I mean, without having specific facts as to whether or not these guards applied to the radiator or available for the radiator in this particular apartment, what the cost is, what the danger is, what is the seeming danger throughout the state. I mean, should we be sallying forth in new areas without records that are not fully developed?
I submit to you that this is a duty that's existed since the Multiple Dwelling Act was written 50 years ago.
But you have no evidence that DCA, the agency that is charged with enforcing that duty, has ever told a single landlord, you've got an uncovered radiator, you're not passing inspection.
You are correct. I also, if you notice, there's no one here today representing the landlords of New Jersey, Amicus, to say, oh, well, we didn't know you had to do this, and this is so unfair.
I'm sure they'll be happy to show up if you'd like to hear from them.
Well, I don't
I suspect maybe they're listening right now.
Perhaps they are. My point is, if it was such a divergence from what was understood to be the law, somebody would be here saying, we can't do this, this is unfair, you can't get a guard, you can't insulate it, it doesn't make the radiator work. And there's no one here. This is clearly a situation where, contrary to what council represents, this may be just their building that's not covering the radiators. I wonder today, since the appellate division ruled almost a year ago, I wonder today if the radiators in that building are covered. I don't know.
Can I give you a hypothetical that's a little off base? You've got this 1-year-old kid who's just finished his breakfast. He's got his fork in his hand. The fork is metal. Crawls over to the socket, puts it in the socket, and he electrocutes himself. I mean, he doesn't die, but he has a shock. Who's responsible here?
The landlord's not, because the landlord doesn't have any control of that outlet. All he does is put into that outlet the required 110 volts, and that's it. Nothing more, nothing less.
But you can get a toddler guard that protects that outlet.
The tenant
landlord, in Justice Timpone's hypothetical, the landlord could install that with minimal cost. Is there a duty on the part of the landlord to do that?
I don't believe so, because, again, the duty that arose here arose in reading the Multiple Dwelling Act.
So if we don't see that duty in the statute, you're not arguing there's a duty.
If I don't see a duty in the Multiple Dwelling Act?
No, I'm sorry. If the court doesn't see the Multiple Dwelling Act as imposing a statutory or regulatory duty, or both, on the landlord to do what you say should have been done here.
To cover the radiator?
That's the end of your argument?
No, because there's still the common law.
Okay, so I think what Justice Timpone is getting at is there a common law duty?
I don't believe there is for the electrical outlet, but I'll give you another example. I'd hate to counter a hypothetical with a hypothetical.
You might guess.
The water into the bathtub. I mean, that's been another cause of action that's recognized when the temperature, whoever's controlling the water temperature in the basement when it's coming into the apartment, clearly the tenants of the apartment could run enough cold water to offset the temperature of the hot water, but yet it is a recognized cause of action that if the temperature of the water that's coming into the unit is above a certain temperature, it is an action against the landlord. So there are things that landlords have been held accountable for. They're not complete insurers, and the Coleman decision cited to a Missouri decision, I believe, and the Missouri court said, same thing, we're not insurers of everyone's safety. But there was enough in the facts of Coleman, something as dangerous as the radiator, for them to reach that conclusion.
What's the basis for the cause of action under your hypothetical? Is it a reg?
Yes. There is a reg that says the water temperature, it's been a few years since I had one of these cases, I'll throw out a number that it can't be above 168 degrees or something. And so it's easy enough to check what the water temperature was set at, and that is
the relief you're seeking, whether it's based on the reg or not, is still the common law. The only question is whether or not the reg supports your common law argument, correct?
Well, that is a question, yes. But I guess the number one concern is I should be able to be standing in front of a jury and arguing whether or not the actions of the landlord were reasonable here, because there is a duty if there is control, going back to the common law. And if you look at the statutory construction for the Multiple Dwelling Act, I think it's pretty clear. If the intended purpose of the act was to stop incidental contact well, what is the thing that is going to be the most simple thing to contact? It's going to be the radiator.
But a duty's for the court. You're not arguing that a jury determines whether there's a duty, are you?
I'm arguing that there's enough to recognize that there may be a duty, that you can't dismiss this case and saying there was no duty.
But isn't duty a question for the court?
Yes.
Okay. So the issue is the court, obviously, the trial court found no duty. The appellate division found a duty. You're not arguing that you can go take your chances with a jury convincing them there's a duty. The jury would consider whether there's a breach of a duty if there was one.
Yes.
Okay. So when you say you want to argue to a jury, you're essentially saying recognize that you're asking this court to recognize a duty so you can do that. You're not saying you can go throw that issue out to a jury, are you?
No. I'm saying that in order for me to argue that there was a breach of the duty,
Have a duty.
Someone has to say that there is a duty.
Right. Okay.
And if is control, then there is a duty. And I apologize if I...
Can I come back to Justice Dimpone's hypothetical?
Sure.
Because you had a response to it, and that's all the landlord does is put the electricity into the plug. How is that any different, and how would the duty be any different than the landlord here, through the heating system, the boiler, putting the hot water into the radiator? In other words, how is the duty to protect any different, and how is it not that of the tenant rather than the landlord?
Because the landlord regulates the temperature of the boiler in the basement. He has a control on that boiler. He or she or his super control the temperature that comes in. In fact, the prosecutor's office...
But there's no evidence in this case that the temperature was too hot. The heater was hot because that's what they do. I didn't see anything in the record that said that this heater was hotter than any other heater in a building should have been. There's nothing to that. There's no regulation I'm aware of for that.
No. There's simply Dr. Nolte opined that if it came in, if the temperature was 212, the radiator was probably 200 degrees. But the prosecutor's office in their investigation commented that tenants were opening their windows to let the heat out.
Okay, so let me come back to that. Then if it's control... Every tenant has the right
to
shut that radiator off in that room. If the room gets too hot, you leave the door open, you shut it off, and it cools down. If it's, I'm getting back to that control issue that's raised in Coleman, isn't the nature of a radiator and its operation different than what Coleman was talking about in the pipes in the wall and come up through the floor, even the feeder pipe that comes up through the floor at the valve? The control is in the hands of the tenant, not the landlord.
In Your Honor's example, you can't just shut off. If your children are sleeping in that bedroom, how do you just shut off the radiator?
You leave the door open.
You leave the
door. I don't know if you ever grew up. Did you grow up in a place with radiators?
I did.
Or baseboards? So did I.
I did. Nine children, and none of us, thankfully,
No, we didn't have nine.
But, yes.
No, I get you.
I guess there's ways around it. I guess you could leave a door open.
No, I understand.
But that's not really the way to control a radiator or the temperature of a radiator.
I was intrigued by your hypothetical comparison to the hot water that comes out in the bathtub, where there is a regulation that says the landlord is responsible for not letting the water come out into the unit above a certain temperature. And that would be something that would be violative, I guess, of the plumbing code, correct?
I believe it was the plumbing. Again, it's been
the
a few years.
Part
I just
of the
know that
dwelling.
It exists as part of a code.
Yeah. So I'm just coming back to Section 14.3, which is the standards of maintenance for the heating system. Do you have it in front of you?
I don't have the standards of maintenance for the heating system.
Do you have access to it? Okay. Well, we've been focusing on D, which is the heating system, and that has the reference to including such parts as heating risers, ducts, and hot water lines. But immediately above that, there is a discussion of heating equipment, which shall not be operated in such a manner as to impair its ability to perform as required hereunder, or create a hazard anywhere in the system due to excessive temperature. So is that where the DCA is trying to regulate something being too hot within the unit that is in the control of the landlord? Is that their effort to deal with equipment in the form of the radiator as opposed to our focus, which has been on D, looking at different parts of the system.
I hear, Your Honor, and I don't think that that would be a stretch to recognize that the DCA is trying to control, but there's really nothing in the record that would suggest that either way.
Well, I raise that because I think it undercuts your position respectfully, because there's nothing to suggest that too much heat is coming into the unit from the boiler, correct? And we do
yes.
have the control valve on the radiator. So we're now in that interstitial point between these two obligations to now impose a covering requirement that doesn't appear to be at least expressly contained in subsection D. And I'm at a loss to interpret D as clearly expressing a desire to have the radiator itself covered in light of the more specific concern about too much heat getting into the unit being covered in subsection C.
No one's alleging that the radiator in question was malfunctioning. It was simply that there was no way to go from, in essence, from 0 to 60 or 0 mm-hmm. to 200 degrees in less than 2 minutes. And that's why it became so dangerous.
So in the record, how hot would the radiator get in the dead of winter? Or how hot was the radiator on the day that this child was burned?
There's no way of knowing other than the extent of the burns. I'm not here looking for sympathy. I'm only raising this right now, which is that the head of the burn unit at St. Barnabas said this was some of the worst burns he's ever seen. You can almost see the child's brain. But that's how hot.
Your expert was not able to opine.
My expert did.
As to the heat the radiator would generate?
I didn't mean to interrupt you, sorry. No, he did not.
Could the severity of burns, and they were severe, no question, could they also be related to the time of exposure in addition to the actual heat of the radiator?
They could have been.
But also the lengthy time of exposure?
They could have been.
Yeah.
The baby was found and was there for a protracted period, found sort of wedged against the radiator.
No one really knows how long the baby had been there.
I understand, but the baby was not found, seen falling, and was not supervised at the time. And
I will agree with that.
So for some period longer than a few seconds, this child was in that position.
Again, no one knows how long. I guess logically it would be probably for a period more than a few seconds. There were two other sleeping children in the room. One says awakened by hearing something and immediately going over and trying to remove JH and having a little trouble doing so and had to pull a little bit harder to unwedge him.
No doubt a terrible accident.
Yes, and I tried to leave that out of this because that's not the issue before the court.
Understood.
Anything you'd like to add?
Unless there's other questions, I am done, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson.
Chief Justice, Associate Justices, I think it's still good morning, and on behalf of NJAJ, once again, we appreciate the opportunity to appear in this case and argue a few points. NJAJ joined this case to ask the court to do two things. The first is to affirm the appellate division's decision that the regulation promulgated under the Hotel and Multiple Dwelling Act imposes a duty of care on landlords to cover radiators, and two, to confirm that landlords have a common law duty to prevent reasonably foreseeable harm caused by heating systems, which we include radiators, as stated by the court in Coleman, which just generally said heating systems, radiators, and pipes. I know the case is about pipes. I had planned to start with the regulation, but I'm going to go in reverse, if it's okay with the court, to discuss the common law, because during the colloquy with both attorneys, there was a discussion of control with the shutoff valve. And I think we need to look back to the case law, the model civil jury charge, of what we're talking about with control. Exclusive control in this context of a landlord really is articulated by the Dwyer Court appellate division decision, and which was also discussed, relies on Coleman, and that's a 1973 case going back to Coleman, which is 1969, 50 years ago. And it says the landlord has the duty to maintain and repair those facilities in or out of the tenant's premises which are an integral part of the equipment under the landlord's control. So if the landlord is controlling the boiler and ultimately delivery of the heat comes from the radiator, there's no question in this case if the radiator was leaking that the landlord has to repair and maintain the radiator. That's not in dispute. So we're talking about control, this issue of the shutoff valve, I submit to the court, is really not relevant to whether or not the radiator is part of a facility or system or equipment under the landlord's control.
Is there using Justice Timpone's hypothetical?
Yes.
If a landlord knows that there are young children in an apartment, does the landlord have a duty to install guards in the form of a toddler guard available in any hardware store for not much money to prevent a child from being electrocuted?
No, because there's nothing about the maintenance, operation, or repair of that outlet that's improper. The delivery of electricity is being provided appropriately.
So as long as so there's nothing in the code that tells the landlord that the electrical system has to be maintained and inspected?
Well, no, the electrical system, if there was sparks flying out of it, okay, is under the maintenance and operation and repair obligations of for a landlord. That,
okay.
Yes.
So the electrical system is the landlord's duty to maintain, and
yes,
the safety of the electrical system is up to the landlord. DCA,
yes,
would cover that. And yet the landlord doesn't have to use an inexpensive guard to prevent a child from being electrocuted. But the landlord has to put a cover on a radiator.
Yes, and going back, if we want, Justice Timpone's hypothetical is not the case before the court, but
I understand that. But
the
where's
issue,
where's
the difference? Because if you put a plug into that outlet first, now you can't use the outlet.
Okay. Do we have anything on the record indicating that whatever, there's this vague cover that we're talking about, and people have talked about, you know, checking on the internet. Do we know that there is an inexpensive radiator guard that would work with this system and still allow the system to deliver heat?
This record before this court does not specifically address that issue.
Okay.
I think the record is silent on that issue. I think the DCA is silent on that issue in terms of interpretation. And I would add, not only is the Landlords Association not here, the DCA could have joined the case as amicus through the Attorney General and taken a position, and they did not. But we do know, the one thing the record, Justice Patterson, the record does say, is that other units in this building did have covers. That we know. I don't know what the cost is, but there is testimony clearly in the case.
We don't know who installed them either, whether
it was
the tenants or the landlord.
I do not know.
I don't want to be nitpicky. I know it's up before. So you said that once you put that cover on, you couldn't use the socket anymore? All it is a little plastic thing that pulls out, costs about 12 cents, and then you can use it in 2 seconds. So
I've used them. I had children. We had them. You could take them out. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, and also, if you don't have it and something's plugged in, a child can take out the plug and still do something. The issue here for recognizing a duty is the nature of the foreseeable dangers.
Correct.
How great the dangers are.
Correct.
And what steps can be taken to mitigate them in determining whether or not public policy should drive us to recognize some sort of common law duty. Am I correct?
I think that's 100% accurate, Justice. I think it goes back to the law school risk versus utility.
Right.
Issue.
So, but isn't one of the problems, at least in this case, we don't have the greatest record in the world. Would you concede that?
I agree. I wouldn't even concede. I would agree.
Yeah. One of the things we should have, if we're determining the nature of the danger, would be if it's possible to quantify, like, the number of burns there are, how many children are burned. They would be the most vulnerable class of people. And then also how inexpensive these guards cost. Do you agree these are all factors that should come into play in determining whether or not we should be recognizing a duty?
I believe that that information would be helpful. I think it would be helpful in terms of recognizing what the risk utility cost analysis would be. But I don't think it's necessary for this court to reach the conclusion that the appellate division did, which I submit was correct.
Are you aware of any court in the United States that has recognized that it's imposed this duty?
I would agree with counsel that I don't think there's really a case either way on that's all squares.
I think there's one from New York, but let me ask you just
comparable
a question.
Duty,
you're asking for the imposition of a new duty.
I submit it's really not a new duty.
Okay.
I think it's an extrapolation from a landlord-recognized duty to provide a safe, habitable dwelling for its tenants, and I think this is part of that. When the model civil jury charge, Anderson case, discusses what's required when the landlord possesses exclusive control.
The appellate division's decision is the first decision ever imposing this duty. Am I correct?
Imposing, stating specifically that the radiator has to be covered as a duty under common law and the regulation. Yes,
okay.
I agree.
And it doesn't have any counterparts in any other state that you're aware of?
I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
But we've spent a little bit of time about the hypothetical from Justice Timpone.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask you, under that hypothetical, someone is undertaking an act that is a complete misuse of the system.
Correct.
Is that the case here when an individual turns the heat on by adjusting a control valve?
That's a good point or question. I think foreseeability is the radiator gets really hot and touching it can lead to a burn. So I think the whole point of the common law is to guard against foreseeable dangers. And if you have a radiator that has water pumping in at 220 degrees in bedrooms, it's foreseeable that someone may touch it like a minor or an infant and will sustain massive injuries like occurred here. So I think that's going back to Ellis, Dwyer, Coleman, Trenacost, all those cases deal with facilities in the exclusive control of a landlord. I mean, we could go, if we're talking about the shutoff valve, I mean, we have cases where the landlord has a duty to make sure that there's security and protection at the vestibule or where people come in and out of apartment building. I mean, that's not, if we're going to talk about control, I mean, people are coming in and out. When we're talking about now an apartment, we're talking about a specific, in an apartment with the radiator as an extension of the boiler, I would argue is more within the exclusive control of the landlord than the security cases, which we've recognized the duty there. I think here it's more clear than it would even be in that, which has been longstanding law. So I think, and I submit again, that it's...
The issue of control, though, I'll use this term, illusory. When you're in the dead of winter and there are freezing temperatures, the residents of an apartment have no choice but to use the radiator.
Correct. It's honorable.
So the issue of control seems, under those circumstances, to be meaningless.
Right. I agree with that. And just I've also lived in apartments with those radiators. It's on or off. I've worked in a state building where it was on and off. And in the winter, we opened the window, let the heat out. And in the summer, we opened the window to let the heat in to warm up the air conditioning because there was no control with the system.
There seems to be a dispute as to whether that's true. I mean, there seems to be disputed two different areas of testimony in this record. It seems like a pretty easy thing to find out, is it? And we don't have a definitive answer on that.
I agree. My review of the record was it's on or off, and I know counsel's
made from what we understand, the superintendent testified to that. The owner says that there are gradations. Counsel's just represented to us that there are gradations that can be used.
I don't want to testify as a fact witness, but for the water has to get into the radiator, so the valve is just regulating the amount of water that's coming in. The temperature of the water is not changing because that's controlled at the bottom by the boiler. So the water that's coming into the radiator is still the same temperature.
But the amount of hot water going into the radiator, here again, we're speculating.
That's fair.
Is it fair to say we don't know the answer to that?
I certainly don't.
Okay.
And I don't think the record's
clear. And that's a
clear
statement.
And I don't think the record's
clear. The record doesn't tell us.
I don't think so. So I think I've made my position on the common law, and I would like to address, if I may, the regulation And starting with Justice LaVecchia's question with respect to the regulation, and it is on page 208 of the appendix that was submitted, I think, to the appellate division, but Section C, I think I'm reading it a little differently than Your Honor may have, because it says heating equipment shall not be operated in such a manner as to impair its ability to perform as required hereunder. And then there's an or, and I think the or goes back to after as. So I'm reading it as heating equipment shall not be operated in such a manner as to create a hazard anywhere in the system due to excessive temperature. That's how I read it. So if my reading is correct, I would argue that the radiator is now at an excessive temperature and that it's being operated incorrectly, and I think it supports the appellate division's decision. I'm reading it right.
I understand.
How do we determine what's excessive temperature when we have no reading, nothing to? Because it has to get hotter. It's not going warm the room.
It has to get hot.
So what is excessive? We have a gauge or a parameter with the hot water coming out into a tub. Here we don't. So how do we determine what excessive is?
And it's not, an excess is not defined in the regulations.
No, the only thing we have is standard of performance under 14.1, which says you have to have a system that's capable of keeping the inside temperature at 68.
Right, which doesn't tell us where the radiator is at.
Which suggests that there's a lot of room in the joints here in this system, at least per DCA's requirements. They were not dictating precise performance requirements for multiple dwellings.
Right, I agree with that, but I think, though, since Coleman, DCA has been aware of Coleman saying that the uppipe needed to be covered. There's never been a challenge to that, and there was a discussion in Coleman more broadly, although it is about pipes, that discussed radiators as well. And they've never said, or it has never said, that it was that ruling was incorrect.
I don't see that ruling as being inconsistent with subsection D, which says hot water lines shall be covered with insulating material.
Right,
and it seems to be perfectly in sync with Coleman. The question is, are we extending it here?
So that's what I wanted to address, Your Honor, which is, if we're going to the statutory interpretation of heating system,
mm-hmm,
and the plain language, I would disagree with Mr. Molinari. To me, heating system has to include the radiator. I think that's unambiguous, and I personally believe that is clear. Because
if so, why didn't they say it? They went through the detail of risers, ducts, and lines, and they leave off radiator, the most important piece in the unit?
I think it's poorly written. I would have written it differently. They say such as, which historically through statutory interpretation is illustrative.
It's
didn't say
than
only
poorly
these
written,
parts.
It's counterintuitive.
I would disagree with that. I think they could have, the DCA could have said only these three, which it did not. It said such as, which is usually an example.
But they're making a point in 14.3 of differentiating between, in A, equipment, facilities, and system. And D is the only part where system is elaborated upon in a very precise and narrow way, whereas other parts are talking about heating equipment much more broadly. So if radiator was intended to be included within the system in D, you would think that it would have been mentioned, wouldn't you?
I would disagree. I think the drafting is not good, but I think when you step back and you take the plain meaning of the word system has to be from front to end, because if you remove the radiator, there's no system. There's no heat in the apartment. So then you have no heating system. Heating system has to start with boiler, and it has to end with the end line. It has to. It's no different than if you want to talk about water and pipes. It has to start with the boiler in the room, and then with the faucet and the water coming out. Then that's a system. Electricity system. You have to get. It has to end somewhere. If there's no ending to a system, there's
then
no
what
system.
What does heating equipment mean in subsection C?
I think that heating equipment in subsection A. I think heating equipment is a part of the heating system. I think system's the bigger one, and equipment falls underneath. Equipment is a piece of the system. Equipment is not broader than system. System's broader than equipment. So by taking that logical extension, equipment has to be a piece of the system.
So is a radiator part of the heating equipment for that subject?
I would say yes.
that's part of the heat. It's part of both.
Yeah, I would say a radiator is part of equipment, and that's why I said if you read, see the way that I'm reading it, that the create goes back as in a manner as to create a excessive temperature. I think it supports that the regulation requires a cover.
But in this case, since we don't know whether it was excessive or not, mm-hmm. does it even apply in this particular case under these facts?
I think the end result suggests that it was excessive.
Well, it's not. I don't think that's the issue. It's not. It may be burning hot at 212 necessary to warm the room or the apartment. That's not necessarily excessive.
And
it's
I agree.
It's on to D is whether or not you should have some sort of guard to protect people from getting burned.
And I agree with you, Justice. I don't know what excessive means. I mean, I think that's. I guess you could argue excessive is subjective, giving. We're talking about water temperature and then ultimately the temperature of the radiator.
Don't feel bad. I don't know what a lot of other words mean either.
So have we any idea how many rental units throughout the state, how many rental units throughout the state have these types of radiators?
That's not part of the record, although I think we're talking about the older buildings.
Right.
Because newer buildings are not built with these systems as far as I know. So I think that's not part of the record. But going back to Section D, heating system, again, I would say is broad. It has to begin from beginning to end, interdependent parts to create a unified whole. And then the such as leads us to the examples, and it's not exhaustive.
The hot water lines, for example, that are mentioned in D.
Yes.
As you've described, water at 220 degrees is coursing through it. So you want a guard in order to protect against receiving burns due to chance contact. That's precisely what the regulation is talking about.
Right.
Radiators, just the same, have water coursing through it at that same temperature. Wouldn't the logic apply and our focus belong on burns due to chance contact as opposed to other parts of the regulation?
Well, I think that's right. I think that's the last thing I was going to say. If the court finds that the regulation is not clear and unambiguous, then we go to intent. And the intent of this regulation is stated at the end of Section D, which is to avoid burns from chance contact. And the most opportunity for chance contact would be the radiator.
This is also remedial legislation.
Right. Which
I
is
mean, when you look at the very beginning of the statute, it specifically says it's to be liberally construed to effectuate the purposes and intent, which is decent, standard, and safe units of dwelling places.
That was my next point. It does. It's supposed to be. It's remedial steps. Remedial legislation. I wrote down. It's supposed to be liberally construed. And I would take the contrary. If it was supposed to be mutually exclusive, the DCA could have certainly said we're limiting this to the heating system exclusively. Risers, ducts, and hot water lines, and it didn't say that. It said
but you would agree that there is ambiguity in this overall scheme as to whether it applies to radiators. It's real easy to apply to radiators. You type out the word radiator. And
that would have been better. But I think if they were trying to be mutually exclusive, they wouldn't have needed the word such parts as. They could have just listed everything. So I think...
Well, obviously you can interpret that as they don't know what different components are in different systems.
Right.
But radiators are a pretty big ticket item in terms of this.
That's fair. I do submit respectfully under my definition of system, it's not ambiguous. I think it's unambiguous.
Other questions, anyone? Yeah. Anything you'd like to add?
I believe I'm just one last. Thing, Your Honor, in terms of, I would like to address the extrinsic evidence. There is no specific agency interpretation from the DCA on this issue. And I submit, to follow up on something Justice Alvin had said during the colloquy, the position of one inspector is not an agency interpretation from the statutory interpretation. And I think the Appellate Division was right to say that really has no bearing on the issue. Thank you very much for your time.
Ms. Hughes, rebuttal.
I just wanted to clarify two points concerning the control valve and the record, the testimony in the record. Mr. Tagliarini, the owner, did testify that the valve opened could be opened, closed, and anywhere in between. There's a quote, if you want 25% heat, you open it 25% of the way. If you want 100% heat, you open it 100% of the way. It can be regulated from the side of the radiator. And Mr. Nieves, who is the...
Can you give us the site that you're, if you have it handy?
Sorry, I have... it's page 59 of Mr. Tagliarini's testimony, line 10 through 14.
Is that, I'm sorry, in our record?
I believe it is. I just pulled it out of my
appendix
binder, but I don't have the appendix site on that.
And
one.
Go ahead, Mr. Nieves.
And then Mr. Nieves testified about the control. He said the question was, it has a valve on it to open or close it. Answer, yes. Question, that controls the amount of heat that is allowed into the radiator. Answer, yes, many tenants open and close it there. Question, it just allows you to open it and close it. It doesn't allow them to set a specific temperature. Answer, yes. And then it wasn't clarified further there. But I do submit that Mr. Nieves testified with the aid of an interpreter. And that last yes, if that's what we're basing the controversy, that it wasn't a control valve, I would submit that's not.
In other, the question was, you can't set a temperature like you would for a thermostat.
Correct.
You can't say, I want 68 degrees and have the radiator respond accordingly.
Correct. But the valve did allow for gradations in the amount that it was opened and closed.
What page was that on the transcript of the Nieves deposition?
That is page 25 of his deposition. That's page 230A of the appendix. I have the appendix set on that one. And then with respect to the questions concerning whether there are any other cases in any other states, counsel, I believe, said there were no cases either way, but I would respectfully disagree. The Rivera case is directly on point, that found no duty under New York's hotel and multiple dwelling law, but also under the common law. And there are several other cases that were cited in my brief, Loving, Hubbard, and Dargy, where courts did not apply a duty to cover radiators under the common law. And we had a similar, although not completely identical, case in the appellate division, Atkins, where it was a question of an uncovered radiator in a school bathroom. And although the Tort Claims Act applied to that, the court in that case did say that an uncovered radiator that's properly functioning was not an unreasonably dangerous condition. And they compared the hotness of the radiator to its essential function. So we do have case law that has not found an uncovered radiator to be an unreasonably dangerous condition under common law, or a duty to cover it under common law. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you to all counsel for the very fine arguments. Mm-hmm.